Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. Hope you had a great weekend. My name is Mark Shiver. Glad to have you listening to the podcast today. And there's a lot to talk about. Of course, the GOP office in Orange County yesterday firebombed. And, of course, I love some of the media, GOP office vandalized. Now, typically when I think of vandalism, I think of maybe writing, you know, graffiti on a wall or maybe kids tipping over a mailbox. I'm not sure a Molotov cocktail or whatever you call a firebomb would I don't know. Vandalism. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, one of these days, our good friends in the mainstream media are just going to decide, you know what? I went to journalism school, and by golly, I've got some ethics, and I'm just going to start telling things like they really are instead of tainting everything and trying to slant everything. I mean, had this been a Democrat office, I think the headlines would have been, you know, political terror attack or something like that. But anyway, fortunately, there's no reports of anyone being injured, and this could have gotten a lot worse in terms of property damage, as the building in Orange County there, the offices are in a kind of a strip setting, and so other buildings nearby. So we're glad that no one was hurt in that really, I mean, despicable incident. I mean, who throws firebombs anyway? I mean, that's really unnecessary. And it's violence. It's extreme violence. And if it, I don't know who did it, but if it comes out that somebody did it because of a political disagreement or something of that nature, maybe they just had enough of Donald Trump, or maybe they, you know, didn't like the governor or whatever. I mean, I have no idea, but there's no reason. Whatever the reason, it's not good enough. And so hopefully law enforcement will be able to get to the bottom of that. But again, we're fortunate and glad that no one was injured in that act of vandalism. You know, kind of like keying a car, right? Or letting a shopping cart in the parking lot run up against somebody's car because you don't like the way they parked. That's vandalism. Putting flammable material into a container, lighting it, and heaving it through a window or whatever. That's not vandalism. That's firebomb. So, Dallas Woodhouse, executive director of the North Carolina Republican Party. I was going to say General Assembly, but I'm not sure where that came from. Anyway, Dallas Woodhouse called it an act of political terror. And I would have to agree. I think it's completely over the top. And again, hopefully they'll be able to get, law enforcement will be able to get to the bottom of that incident. We've got a great show for you today, by the way. We're going to talk with Mayor B.J. Murphy. If you've never heard him before, quite a guy, and I kind of wish he was my mayor, actually. Sounds like he has a whole lot on the ball, and I'm looking forward to talking to him. Of course, he's the mayor of Kinston, and as you know, they are battling massive flooding, and life as it was just a week ago or so, certainly not back to normal, and may not be for a long time. We'll find out what the good folks in Kinston need from Mayor B.J. Murphy. We're also going to talk to Francis DeLuca, president of the Civitas Institute, just get his take on where the election campaign season is and what he thought about the debates and what he thought about the vandalism, or actually firebombing, of the Orange County GOP, and just talk to him about polling. Civitas, as you know, their big poll breakfast coming up just a couple of days, Wednesday the 19th. That will be at the Doubletree by Hilton on Hillsborough Street in Raleigh, next to NC State. You know that more likely as the Brownstone, so that hotel that's been there forever. And a great facility, great location, great venue for the Civitas poll breakfast. And that'll be at 7:45 a.m. For more information, you can go to ncivitas.org/breakfast to pick up some tickets there. Or the same day, down in Wilmington, you can go to the Courtyard by Marriott at the Wilmington Wrightsville Beach location, and that's at 11:45. You can go to ncivitas.org/lunch for information on that and to get your tickets. So we'll be talking with Francis DeLuca And then we'll also talk with Dale Falwell. Big article in the Daily Signal, dailysignal.com, about underfunded pensions all across the country. And, of course, Dale running for treasurer, he's very much up to speed on that topic. So we'll find out what North Carolina is looking at and why as we talk with Dale Falwell. Thank you for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. As you know, you can hook us up on Twitter at WhatMattersNC. You can tweet at us. We'll tweet back at you. And you can also engage with us on Facebook, What Matters in North Carolina. There, we'd love to get involved with you on social media. Well, we got a great show today, so why don't we just dive right on in? Well, as you know, every Monday we like to talk to one of the fine mayors from one of the towns and cities across our great state. Today, our Mayor Monday segment on What Matters in North Carolina features Mayor B.J. Murphy from Kinston. Welcome to the program, Mr. Mayor.
It's good to be with you all. Sorry about some of the background noise. A lot of food being brought in and delivered to Kinston, North Carolina today. Really excited about it.
Well, that's absolutely understandable and no problem at all. And normally, as I had mentioned to you a few days ago last week, our segment typically likes to focus on some of the special things about Kinston, and we'll certainly talk about that. But right now, you guys are really having a challenge on your hands. Can you give us the latest update on where things are right now in Kinston?
Yes, sir. And I appreciate you having us on because it really is important for the story to continue to be told outside of Eastern North Carolina. Folks living in Eastern North Carolina understand we just went through a devastating hurricane with devastating flash floods. Like, I mean, I'm 36 years old. I've never seen something like that before. And we did, just in the city of Kiss alone, about 300 or 400 emergency evacuations Saturday a week ago, just during the storm. And then over the last week, we spent time getting everybody prepared for historic floods. And I think the Neuse River Kinston peaked at 28.6 feet.
Wow.
And to put that in perspective, Hurricane Floyd, the quote-unquote flood of the century that was only 17 years ago, was 27.7. So we're going through some major challenges right now. Thankfully, because of Floyd, we were able to have already evacuated so many of those places that normally would get flooded. So 90% of our residential areas were okay, but we still have a long recovery because still, roughly 400 people or so displaced just in Lenoir County. Businesses along Highway 70 still can't get into their shops right now to assess the damage because the waters are still high. We've got a long recovery ahead of us.
Our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina is Mayor B.J. Murphy of the town of Kinston. And Mayor Murphy, when this began to rain last Saturday, when it began to rain Friday night and Saturday, were you expecting in any way the kind of flooding and devastation that has happened? I think it caught everybody off guard.
It did, and I'll tell you, I swung by our public services complex because we have a 24-hour number, and I knew the hurricane was coming. I want to say thank you to the ladies who were manning the 24-hour number because they were prepared to spend the night there. That was 4 o'clock. By 4:45, the manager was walking in and said, we've got to open up the EOC by 5 o'clock, and by 6 o'clock, we were issuing a mandatory curfew, and between 6 and 8, my service to my community is through an elected capacity. So my hat's off to our military men and women out there that give me that ability. But I kind of got a small sense of what a fog of war really is like that night because that flash flooding was so unexpected. Those first 2 hours from about 6 to 8 p.m. was something like I've never seen before. And we were still evacuating people up until 2:30 in the morning. And hats off to our police and fire, our National Guard came in, emergency management folks, even our rec department was involved in helping get people out of harm's way.
Well, I know that you have had your hands full, and I have heard nothing but good things about the way that you are managing this event and the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew. Mayor Murphy, in terms of what Kinston is going through right now, can you just give us a sense, as someone who lives there, what does it feel like? I mean, it's got to be awful.
I tell you, the best thing going for us was the worst disaster that ever happened to us, and that was Hurricane Floyd. So besides the fact that FEMA came in and helped buy up a lot of homes and city county helped demolish them, For example, the new sports shop. A lot of your listeners may be familiar with the Highway 70 Kissler. You got Pig Wiggly, King's, new sports shop, all right there together. A big destination for a lot of folks in the Triangle area heading towards the coast, especially during the summer months. But the new sports shop owner, I was talking to him just last night. He said, "Mayor, the day you can get me in my building to assess the damage, 7 days later is when I want to be marketing merchandise." And that's an aggressive timetable, yes, but he's able to put that type of plan together because he's already got the experience of what it takes to get through it. So I'm going to tell you, what you're going to find over the coming weeks and months is that the people of Eastern North Carolina are absolutely resilient. We have banded together like no time I've ever seen before. And I can't thank our friends along the coast who got a little bit of hurricane, but not too much. Our friends in the Triangle and the western part of the state, and in fact, even across the country, we're already seeing love and support donations already pouring into Eastern North Carolina. And we're very humbled by the simple acts of kindness. And it really just shows how wonderful humanity really is.
Well, we know that there has been a lot of pulling together down there in the eastern part of the state to try to deal with some of these things. So not to be stupid or not aware of what's going on, you say the noose, it was crested at 29 feet?
28.6 is the last number I heard.
Wow. And has it begun to recede? Can you tell that it's going back?
It is. It is definitely going back. It's definitely receding now. So a challenge we've got is once it gets off of Highway 70, and even where there's a lot of other, we had roads through the flash floods that literally washed out. So we're kind of like on an island right now. Literally, our county is split in two. The only way you can get from one side of the county to the other is via helicopter right now. So that's not happening a lot, as you can imagine. So some churches, their congregations, one congregation met the church, the other congregation met in a parking lot under some trees. So it's just amazing, but there's still a long recovery ahead of us, and the DOT has to go in once the water recedes from the highways. They've got to go in and inspect the road to make sure it's still accessible and safe. And so one thing we're encouraging is through this patience that we've got to display over the next few weeks and months is that DOT's job is to make sure it's safe for us. So when you see a barricade, we're asking everybody to turn around. Don't drown. I know it sounds elementary, but we literally had a fatality in Lenoir County last week because someone wanted to go around a barricade. And that's just something that's so avoidable, breaks our heart, and we just want to make sure people adhere to the curfews as well as the barricades that are up.
Our guest is Mayor B.J. Murphy of the town of Kinston here on our regularly scheduled Mayor Monday segment. Unfortunately, instead of talking about all of the good things that make Kinston a fine town in North Carolina, we're having to talk about the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew. But if we weren't talking about Hurricane Matthew, Mayor Murphy, what is some of the things about Kinston that you think are just really, really fabulous and make you enjoy living there?
Well, I'll tell you, we're seeing why our community is so wonderful over these last few days, how much we've come together. We literally learned that the river was going to go about a foot higher than we anticipated at like 11 o'clock that night. So by 10:30 the next morning, the Kinston Teens, you can go check them out, kinstonteens.org. They put together a community prayer with a call to action for 10:30 the next morning. So you had less than 12 hours notice, and it was overnight. That next morning, we literally had young people, old people, blacks, whites, all different religions there. It was all different religions, congregated. We probably had 300 or 400 people in this one spot in our community. And that really is a testament to the community that we've become. I will tell you that Kinston is becoming a destination. A lot of people have heard of, the chef and the farmer because of the PBS show Chef's Life. So that has helped with some of the state recognizing and nation recognizing who we are. Mother Earth Brewery, local microbrewery here, is doing phenomenal things. And I could go on and on with all the other restaurants, but we really are becoming a destination. And these businesses are going to be up and running to make sure that people can continue to come back, visit, lend a helping hand if they want, but they certainly are welcome to come and spend their dollars.
Absolutely. Mayor Murphy, one of the things I like to ask mayors is questions that have to do with growth. I know that Kinston has experienced some growth, as you say. They're becoming the town is becoming a destination. How? Let me ask you this: in terms of dealing with things that might come easier to deal with in a larger metropolitan area because of a broader tax base, how is Kinston dealing with infrastructure needs? And more importantly, how is this Matthew aftermath going to affect Kinston's ability to address those needs?
Yeah, that's a great question. I will tell you that just on our main drag in downtown Kinston, it's called Queen Street. We used to call it the Magic Mile because it's literally a mile long. We've got a roughly $10 million water and sewer project. Now, water and sewer projects is probably not as sexy as renovating a 1924 Farmers and Merchants Bank, which, by the way, we had a private citizen do in Kinston as well. It's called the O'Neill, which is a luxury boutique hotel.
Uh-huh.
But I think your listeners and other mayors would understand that if you don't have a solid infrastructure, the other things you do in business, the recreation, the encouraging of economic development, those things can't happen. So we need good roads, we need good schools, we need good water and water supply, and we need to take the sewage somewhere where it's safe and we can dispose of it and do all the cleaning and things that they do. But that is a big challenge for rural North Carolina. Is I've got this one project on Queen Street, but I can tell you right now, I've got thousands of miles of pipes underground that are 75 or 100 years old right now.
Wow.
And that is millions, tens of millions of dollars that it would take to help upgrade that. So that is a big challenge for especially Kinston, but I would imagine most rural areas in North Carolina.
Our guest is Mayor B.J. Murphy in Kinston. Mr. Mayor, what can people do practically? We're in Raleigh. What can we do? What can people in Asheville do or Charlotte or Murphy to help Kinston right now in your time of need? What do you need the most? What would make the most difference?
You know what? This is going to sound bad, but I think one of the biggest things we could use is cash. And I don't mean the city of Kinston or the county. I mean the local nonprofits that are credible. Like, for example, the Lenore Green United Way, someone could donate to them and earmark it for the local Salvation Army or local American Red Cross or an organization called ICOR, I-C-O-R, because they help with food bank and help people eat meet ends meet. Little things like that go a long way. I literally have two truckloads of supplies coming from Carteret County right now because they did a fundraiser last night where they raised over $15,000. So, I mean, that's the kind of beautiful things that are happening right now. I can tell you, folks can reach out to me if they've got an idea or something. My Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that is BJMurphy360, and someone can reach out, connect with me, and I can help point them to something more specific, maybe something they feel more led to do. So that's BJMurphy360. But I tell you, it is beautiful to see the state coming together. The governor has been here in Eastern North Carolina multiple times. He's called me at least three times. He's been in Kinston this past week. So I can't say enough good things about his leadership during this time of crisis in North Carolina.
Yeah, it really does seem that Governor McCrory has been really managing this crisis very well. So as a mayor looking to the state for leadership, you feel like he's providing that leadership?
He's been first class. In fact, you know, you've got expectations of what leaders should do, and I believe, and it's my personal opinion, as a one mayor of 530-some municipalities across the state, that he has gone above and beyond what you need a governor to do. And that was issuing the call, the warning call from the very beginning, multiple press conferences every day, still having the campaign, which is unbelievable. I still don't know why they did a debate last week. I even asked him about that. But you know what? We need strong leadership. And my personal humble opinion is that he's been giving it to us. And my hat's off to him. And I can't thank him enough. I don't even know how he's sleeping, considering how much sleep I've really gotten myself.
Well, we know that leaders like Governor McCrory and yourself there locally, Mayor Murphy, are having to be vigilant, and we appreciate all that you are doing. We will encourage our listeners to just stroke a check, send some cash, and help you guys out, and hopefully that will people will respond in a big way. So thank you very much for being our guest today. We'll look forward to getting you on again when things are not so hectic. But Mayor B.J. Murphy, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Y'all take care, and God bless.
You too. Thank you, sir. It's our pleasure to welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina, Francis DeLuca, president of the Civitas Institute. Francis, how you doing?
Doing good, Mark. How about yourself?
Doing well. We're kind of in the midst of the fire and brimstone of politics right now. The Trump and Clinton campaigns are just going at it. It's almost like it's not a daily headline now. It's almost every hour some new crazy allegation from either side. And have you ever seen anything like this before?
Well, I mean, it's not all that different than a normal election cycle in terms of battling over battleground states and all that kind of stuff. What's different is the two candidates is that we've never, again, everybody says this, but it's true, never had two candidates as unpopular as these two are. Never had two candidates with one on the political side with baggage, the other the not politician now with, you would have to say baggage, some of the allegations, some of the, you know, anybody who's 70 years old and has spent their life in the media and used the media to get publicity for their business things, there always was going to be a lot of possibility of stuff being dragged up from the back, because one of the things Donald Trump made his name and helped to build his business was kind of being outrageous.
Yeah.
You know, he was bigger than life, kind of the P.T. Barnum showman thing, but he built a multi-billion dollar real estate empire on doing that.
Right.
So, and then Hillary Clinton has this, you know, almost 30-year record in public life, and most of that revolves around kind of being secretive.
Yeah.
You know, never wanting people to know what she was doing, did not want to, people to have access to things. You know, she in when she was in Arkansas as the first lady, worked for a law firm, which none of the records could ever be found till almost the end of the Clinton administration.
Yeah.
All these kind of things that are, you know, funny. The cattle deal, the cattle future deals, the land investing, all kind of a little bit shady.
Yeah.
But nobody ever able to connect dots. So you had that kind of record with her, and then you go into her actual public life. You know, she was in 1993 tried to push healthcare, you know, a national healthcare plan.
I remember that. Yeah.
And that, you know, that kind of defined the Clinton administration for a number of years and caused Democrats to lose Congress. A lot of that tax increases and that caused Democrats to lose Congress for the first time in 30 plus years in 1994. So then she becomes Secretary of State and kind of the world fell apart under their watch.
Yeah.
You know, the entire Middle East and North Africa, you know, is an upheaval, not to mention the rest of the world that is very unsafe. The Chinese have marched ahead with trying to expand their reach in Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
The North Koreans have continued to build missiles and nuclear bombs. So you've got her on the political side. You got Donald Trump on the kind of not political side, but both with a lot of baggage, a lot of unpopularity. That's the only thing that's really different about this. Other than that, you think about it, they're fighting over four or five states, which are battleground states. That's pretty normal politics.
Yeah. And North Carolina is one of those states.
Right, which North Carolina has been a battleground state now for the past couple cycles, since 2008, North Carolina has turned into this battleground state.
Hmm. Now, several months ago, maybe even 5 or 6 months ago, we were talking to some polling experts who said that polling this time around could be more difficult because of the negatives that are attached to both candidates. People just don't like either one of them, and that might make polling different. Now, Civitas has done several polls since then. Are you finding that, or is polling still pretty much as, you know, it is generally, or has the negatives made it more difficult?
Well, I think the sustained attacks on Donald Trump by kind of everybody has made the people we asked a question a couple months ago and said, you know, about Donald Trump, and said, do you know anybody who's voting for Donald Trump but will not admit it? And almost 20% of the people said yes.
Wow.
So that is a kind of a big number.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, if there truly is an undercount of the Donald Trump vote, that could be a big thing in this election. That could prove a lot of pollsters wrong. But that said, polling is pretty much what polling's been. It's always been getting harder. And that's probably this year we could see that it's getting even harder. Not just it's also because people aren't answering polls like they used to. It's harder to reach people with cell phones now. Less people have landlines. The population is more mobile to an extent that they're not home much.
Yeah.
They're out and about. So, polling itself is getting harder. And then you've got these two candidates which are polarizing, which I think makes the polling harder. So that's part of it.
We're looking forward to a Civitas poll breakfast.
Speaking of polls.
Yeah, just wanted to mention that because Wednesday, October the 19th at 7:45 a.m. at the Doubletree Hilton there in downtown Raleigh, which used to be, of course, the Brownstone.
Up by NC State.
Yeah, and we'll have a poll breakfast then, and also later at lunch, a poll lunch in Wilmington at the Courtyard by Marriott in Wilmington and Wrightsville Beach. So a couple of opportunities for our listeners to...
The one is going to be the breakfast is at 7:45 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, at the Brownstone up by NC State, on Hillsborough Street. The lunch in Wilmington is at the Quality Inn out really close to the UNCW. It's called it's funny, they call it the Wrightsville Beach one, but everybody goes, this isn't Wrightsville Beach. It's up in Camden Avenue.
Yeah.
It's kind of near where 40 dumps into College Road. So for anybody who's not sure where that is, it's on Camden Boulevard up near where 40 dumps into College Boulevard right there on the right. So it's not at Wrightsville Beach per se. I think that's good marketing on their part. Yeah,
exactly.
You can't even see the beach from there.
Well, and for more information and tickets, our listeners can go to ncivitas.org/breakfast or /lunch. Now, what I wanted to talk to you about today, in addition to what we've already discussed, Francis, is I wrote a piece about the governor's debate with the attorney general, and my response, even just partisanship aside, I really thought the governor did well, and I actually wrote that I felt like he won that debate hands down. We saw Senator Burr and Deborah Ross debate a few nights later. What were your thoughts on those two events?
Well, starting with the governor's debate, the first one, I agree with you. I think the governor won. It surprised me, but it shouldn't have. You know, the governor had been very busy dealing with the floods, with the hurricane and everything, and I was thinking, well, he may not be as prepared as he needs to be, because how much time has he had to prepare for the debate? In some ways, that may have helped him, because Roy Cooper looked overprepared. Roy Cooper just about, you could probably, if someone went through and counted, he either said HB2 or the governor's, basically the governor's lying. If those were his two answers to everything. And so, you know, even if they were unrelated, he would bring up HB2 or the governor's not telling the truth. And McCrory seemed much more relaxed, much more at ease, much more in command of the facts. And I wondered if some of that wasn't that he didn't prepare as much. So he kind of had to think about what he was saying.
That's a good point.
And to an extent, maybe he was tired. Mm. And sometimes when you're tired, you can be more relaxed. And when you're fully focused on what you're about, maybe he was still thinking about his next press conference for the hurricane, and he was thinking about the hurricane because he brought it up several times during the debate. He brought up what was going on. So that's what I would say about the governor looked relaxed and commanded the facts. Roy Cooper looked rehearsed and full of talking points. And then what really, the Senate debate surprised me more.
Did it really?
Richard Burr did not surprise me. I mean, he's been doing this for years. He's got this kind of demeanor and attitude, and I thought he pretty much stuck to that. But I have seen Deborah Ross, and she is pretty sharp. She is pretty quick on her feet. I've seen her talking on the floor of the legislature, and, you know, I was surprised how she wasn't that Deborah Ross.
No.
She, again, appeared to be rehearsed and full of talking points, and she, too, basically, it was either HB2 or Donald Trump in her debate, you know, bring up one of those two things in response to almost everything questioned or whatever else. And I was a little disappointed in that because I thought that she would be much more, like I said, articulate, grabbing whatever was being talked about then and turning it into something, quotable or that she would it would flow a lot better.
Yeah.
But it didn't. What I'll say about both of the debates, and this was a surprise, and you know I usually don't. The national moderators, Carl and Chuck Todd, did great jobs. Jonathan Carl and Chuck Todd, I thought they did great jobs. You know, they were pretty fair in doing the debate.
Yeah.
I thought they kept it moving. I thought they allowed the candidates to interact. They didn't get in the way of what they were doing too much.
Yeah.
A little bit, but not too much. But compared to the national debates, so much better.
Yeah.
And those were more like debates should be than they are on the national level.
I wanted to, you probably may or may not be able to answer this, but I don't understand, Francis, why it is that most of these debates I've seen, there always seems to be a real liberal biased moderator that, you know, particularly in the national debates, we've seen them interject themselves into the process. And why do the Republican candidates allow that? Why can't they put their foot down and say, no, wait a minute, you know, let's have so-and-so instead of this person?
Well, one, it's hard to find people in the media who aren't liberal. I mean, it's just there. That's not a criticism or anything. That's just a statement of fact.
Yeah.
You know, tends to be either conservatives don't go in the media or they don't get promoted if they go in and they change so that they get promoted. I'm not sure which it is. But, you know, like I said, I was very surprised that the governor agreed to Chuck Todd as the as the moderator. But I got to say, he did.
Yeah.
He was fair. And so it does go to show you some of these politicians know more than me about this stuff. You know, I was wrong. I got to admit when you're wrong. But on the national level, you know, you go back to probably the most famous incident with the Candy Crowley in the in the Romney, where she said, you know, told him he was wrong, fact checked immediately, and she was wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, but you once someone does that, you can't take it back.
That's right. Yeah. And I think they know that. Well, you made a point that I wanted to follow up on. The Governor McCrory has almost had to stop, you know, being a candidate. And has a full-time emergency management official now guiding the folks down east, particularly Kinston. In fact, we talked with Mayor B.J. Murphy a few minutes ago from Kinston and all of the amazing flooding that's going down there. And he had high praise for Governor McCrory. He said he's doing an excellent job in leading this crisis and inspiring confidence among people. Does this typically, in your experience of having watched elections, when an incumbent has to sort of shift their focus from being on the campaign trail and suddenly, like Governor McCrory, now I'm being governor and I've got to, you know, manage a crisis, does that help in any way? Or
It can't help but help. I mean, he's doing what governors do. And anytime you can be in front of the voters being a governor, it helps you in your campaign because you don't have to say, this is what I'm going to do. They see you up on TV doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm curious. I'm not sure how much publicity he's getting for this, you know, in other words. But, you know, he's appeared on national TV for some of his press conferences that have been carried live by national shows and everything. So he's lucky. I mean, to the extent that he is lucky that this has happened, that he's able to manage it like it's been managed, you know, that nothing appears to have fallen apart in their response.
Yeah.
Now, I can tell you, if the response was terrible, he wouldn't be so lucky.
Yeah.
He'd be wishing, you know, none of this would happen.
Exactly.
Right now, I would have to say they're very happy that he's not having to answer questions about anything. And in fact, I commented to someone the other day who asked me a question on a show about House Bill 2 and said, you know, I asked him, I said, how many times have you heard House Bill 2 mentioned in the last several weeks outside of the debates? I said, it's kind of not an issue. It's a non-issue right now. People are worried about the hurricane. They're worried about the economy. They're worried about the national election. They're not worried about this bill that really doesn't impact anything.
Yeah. Well, and before we finish our segment, I did want to ask you about that because I keep going back to your experience, but it's pretty lengthy, and you've had your finger on the pulse of North Carolina for quite some time. Have there been people that have just moved into the state? We know the state is growing remarkably. I find it just really amazing, Francis, that there are any kind of numbers of people that would oppose House Bill 2. You know, I would think that the average North Carolinian would want their daughters safe and all that. And yet some of the polling has shown that, you know, it's kind of mixed. And is that because the state has just changed demographically? Or
it's because most people have no idea what House Bill 2 is.
Okay.
They just know that it is a bill that discriminates against gay and lesbians.
Okay.
That's their view of the bill. They don't know what it really does.
So if they did,
it'd be fine. If they knew what the bill did, if they knew the kind of the lay of the land, but that's not what the media did. The media, you know, the most far-reaching anti-gay lesbian bill in the nation, the most discriminatory bill in the nation. You use those terms and people are not going to like it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not saying those people are wrong. I'm saying that's what they know.
Yeah.
And the media has done a poor job. But then again, the media is against it.
Yeah.
The media opposes the bill, so therefore they are going to describe it in the worst terms possible. And a lot of the hype about how it's hurt North Carolina's economy, it's just that hype. You know, again, most of the things they're showing are things that are not right now. Nobody's moved out of North Carolina. No one said, because of this bill, I'm taking my 1,000 employees and we're leaving.
Yeah.
In fact, people are continuing to come to the state.
That's right.
It's nobody's leaving.
Yeah. Well, one last, any thoughts on this horrific event Sunday in Orange County? Somebody firebombed the GOP headquarters.
This is one of those things where, you know, passions get hot. It's terrible, you know, that happened. It'll be curious to see if the same outrage it will be present as would have been present if it had been like a Hillary Clinton headquarters or a Democratic headquarters and it had been bombed, because I can guarantee you, you know, that would be front page New York Times.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think this was front page New York Times.
No.
You know, it but it's bad. People could be hurt. What's worse there is, you know, if the fire had lasted, had not went out on its own, it could have burned down a bunch of other people's businesses.
Yeah.
And you know where that is, the Daniel Boone Shopping Center. I mean, that's been there for years. So, you know, that could have been very costly for other business owners through no fault of their own. And that's, you know, none of that is acceptable in a nation like ours. It kind of also goes back to a general climate of disrespect for laws and for civil order and civil discourse.
Yeah. Well, whoever did it, it certainly was not something that they should have done. And hopefully law enforcement will be able to get to the bottom of that. Francis DeLuca, always a pleasure to have you on What Matters in North Carolina. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joining us now on What Matters in North Carolina is Dale Falwell. He has been in the North Carolina House of Representatives. He has overseen the salvaging and restructuring of the Employment Security Division, and he is a candidate for treasurer here in North Carolina. Dale, welcome back.
Hello, glad to be back on the show, and hello to all your listeners across North Carolina.
One thing that prompted me to want to speak with you this Monday, Dale, is an article that I saw dated October 14th, the Daily Signal, which is a publication that is the Heritage Foundation is behind. The headline says, state local governments have funded only 35 cents of every dollar committed to pensions. Now, I know we've talked about this before, but it would appear, Dale, that the underfunded pension reality in states across the country, including North Carolina, is becoming something that is garnering more attention.
Well, it is, and this problem in North Carolina is one that can no longer be ignored. The can has been kicked down the road for 35 years, especially on the health care obligation, and it can no longer be ignored. And I'm applying for this job to be the chief financial officer of the state, the keeper of the public purse, simply because I think that 4 years from now, as the state treasurer in North Carolina, we will not be talking about this problem. We'll be talking about the solutions that we've implemented to address the problem. And only by implementing those solutions, where we'll be working toward solving this $30 billion health care liability and over a $10 billion pension liability for our state teachers and other state employees and local workers. Only by doing that are we going to be able to maintain North Carolina's AAA bond rating.
Our guest is Dale Falwell, and we're talking about underfunded health care and pension liabilities here in North Carolina. Dale, there's a lot of people who are retired. There are a lot of people who are employed and who will be retired in the future, and they are expecting, you know, what they signed up for, to get retirement, to get health care. And yet these financial obligations are a reality, and they're not going away anytime soon.
They're not going away, and that's why I'm applying for this job, to preserve and strengthen these plans. And there are a lot of other important functions of the state treasurer's office. You know, your listeners have heard this from me and from you in the past. The state treasurer manages an amount of money 5 times larger than the responsibility of the legislature or the governor. It's almost $100 billion. It's one of the largest pools of money in the world in terms of public pension plans. And these issues regarding these un- and underfunded pension and health care plans are a huge deal, because people don't wake up in the morning thinking about AAA bond ratings or unfunded IOUs. They do wake up thinking about, how are we going to educate our children, pay for our roads, pay for our ports, the zoo, and all the other core functions of state government. These two problems that you've been talking about this morning are going to attack, and I mean attack financially, the ability to do all those other things that people do wake up in the morning and think about. I think, obviously, these issues are estimable because we have estimates. They're probable because people, as you just mentioned, Mark, are going to retire and are going to get sick. But in an optimistic mode, these are solvable. And I'm very optimistic about taking what I've learned as a blue-collar worker, where I started with my hands, my back, and my feet, which ultimately changed my heart and my mind about the need to be educated at UNCG. Taking all that and putting it with my white-collar experience, over 12 years as an investment advisor, where I've actually made money and managed stocks and bonds and know a lot about those markets, with the oldest name in that business, Alex Brown and Sons, and combining it with my legislative experience, where I know how to get things done and I know how to attack problems and not people on behalf of the citizens of North Carolina.
Our guest is Dale Falwell. We're talking about North Carolina's obligations in the area of health care and retirement, pensions, and all of that that has to do with this large pool of money that Dale said is around $100 billion. And Dale, one of the paragraphs in this article by the Daily Signal says, unlike private pension plans that are required to use certain interest rate assumptions, state and local pensions can use whatever interest rate assumptions they want. A simple jump in interest rate assumptions can reduce a plan's required contributions by half. Is that what's been happening here in North Carolina? The interest rate assumptions have just been off, and as a result, the liability just keeps growing?
The interest rate assumptions that North Carolina is using are 7.25%. They have not achieved those returns on average, underscore on average, for the last 15 years. And I think in this low interest rate environment, there's low likelihood that we're going to achieve it over the next 15 years. The reason that's important to your listeners is very simple. You can make the health or the fundedness of this pension plan look as healthy or unhealthy as you want to by just changing that number. I think 7.25 is unrealistic. It was very realistic back in the 90s when interest rates were higher, but it's unrealistic. It's been unrealistic for the last 15 years. And it's going to be unrealistic for the next 15 years. So being the keeper of the public purse as the treasurer of North Carolina, it's about integrity, ability, and passion. And the first role of integrity is to be honest with the people of North Carolina about these interest rate assumptions. They need to be lowered, and I will lead the effort to lower those so that we can have a realistic view about where we really are in this process.
Dale, you've served in the North Carolina General Assembly, so you know the inner workings of what goes on there on Jones Street. And perhaps I'm showing a little ignorance here, but I think our listeners would like to know who sets those interest rate assumptions. Is it the treasurer? Is it the General Assembly? Is there a committee that's involved? How does that work?
There's a retirement board, and there's some governance issues that are set up. Being a good leader is about being a great listener. And let me tell you who I'm listening to. I'm listening to Warren Buffett. I'm listening to other pension plans across the country and around the world. I'm listening to Bloomberg. I'm listening to Wall Street Journal and all of the folks that I have knowledge of when I was in the investment business. No one thinks that 7.25% on average is achievable over the next 15 years. So my point of telling you that is that I will listen to these people and combine it with the instincts I have that when you have zero interest rate environment, thinking you can earn 7.25% is way too optimistic. And I will be honest with the people of North Carolina. And the reason that it has never been lowered is that it's a political hit. You know, when you're in charge of something and you all of a sudden go from 195% funded, which is what they say it is now, and you plug in a different number that all of a sudden makes it 85%, well, 85% is realistic. And more importantly, I'm the first Republican in state history who's ever received the following endorsements: state employees, the Police Benevolent Association, North Carolina Troopers, Fraternal Order of Police, majority of sheriffs, professional firefighters, all of those groups who have vetted me and who have endorsed our candidacy have money in this plan. And they all understand, appreciate exactly what I'm saying about what these interest rates assumptions are, and they've endorsed me for this candidacy.
Yeah, that was big doings on, I guess it was Thursday or Friday, when the Charlotte Observer came out with an endorsement, and certainly congratulations on that. Dale, this
and
is...
Let me elaborate on that a moment. You know, the Charlotte Observer, their readers really, everybody cares about AAA bond rating. It impacts what Currituck County has to pay when they want to dredge. It impacts what Wake County wants to pay when they want to build schools. But, you know, to be the second largest financial center in the United States, which is Charlotte, North Carolina, it really impacts, you know, there are several major employers in our state. And the people at Charlotte Observer also care about roads and education and health care and all these other things. And they understand this is not, Mark, about Democrat and Republican. This is not about male and female. This is not about liberal versus conservative, Republican versus Democrat. This is about mathematics. And I'm really good at it, and I enjoy doing it, and I look forward to solving these problems on behalf of North Carolinians.
Our guest, Dale Falwell, here. We're talking about liabilities in the state's retirement plan and employee health plan for retirees and state employees. Dale, the thing that is kind of the elephant in the room when you talk about this is the General Assembly. And you would basically have to convince folks who are, you know, very politically minded. They want to get reelected. And, you know, how do you envision conversations where you say, look, guys, you know, we need to do X, and they say, well, Dale, we can't do X because we might not get reelected. That's going to be a tough dynamic.
Well, what this interest rate that we've been talking to is directly under the constitutional and statutory purview of the state treasurer, period.
Okay.
And obviously, the important dialogue would need to go into with the General Assembly is not just about this, you know, the pension plan, but it's also about what we're going to do to fix the bankrupt state health plan. So I'm very optimistic, and the people in the General Assembly understand this also. So I'm going to do what I've always done, which is listen, act, and fix, and very optimistic about the ability to do those things by working with people and listening to people.
Our guest, Dale Falwell, here on What Matters in North Carolina. And you mentioned that Charlotte Observer and others have endorsed your campaign. Dale, you're obviously running a statewide race. And forgetting for just a moment, if you can, the specific opportunity that you are seeking as treasurer, What are you feeling and hearing and sensing from people as the general mood when you go to Currituck County and shake hands, when you go to Murphy or to Dare County or, you know, Knightdale? What are you hearing from people? Are people optimistic? Are they worried? Are they anxious? Are they excited? What, and not just about your race, but the general mood of folks that you're running into in North Carolina?
It's all the above. What people like about our message is that we've actually do things. We actually fix things, and we don't fix things just to talk about them. We actually fix things so that no one has to fix them again. And it could be as singular as the work I did 6 years ago on workers' comp reform. You know, the Goodyear factory in Fayetteville had to manufacture 3,000 tires a day just to pay the workers' comp premium.
Good grief.
That plant every day. It could be the reforms that I implemented, didn't write them, didn't vote on them, but implemented them. The unemployment agency, where we empowered the 700 hardworking state employees of that agency to root out the wage fraud and abuse, and we became a national leader in rooting out the wage fraud and abuse, which had a lot to do with, not everything, but a lot to do with paying off the unemployment debt and doing the surplus, which allowed North Carolina businesses to not have to pay those surcharges that made us have the highest unemployment taxes in 42 states. You know, organ donation, vertical driver's license, changing the kindergarten cutoff date. What I try to do is I try to take my skills as a blue-collar worker, white-collar investment advisor, and a public servant, and I try to combine all those things in my mind and figure out how can we really solve this problem so nobody has to deal with it again. All I can tell you is this, Mark. There is no reason why the largest purchaser of health care in North Carolina, and that is state health plan, cannot do it better and more efficiently on behalf of its participants and the taxpayers in North Carolina. There is no reason that cannot occur. And when that starts occurring, and that's the reason I have the three pledges out there, I will eliminate at least $100 million in Wall Street fees. The pension plan earned less than 1% last year, paid out almost $600 million in fees to Wall Street.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Good grief.
I'm never kidding.
That's crazy.
Number two, I will freeze family premiums. We are driving away our young, healthy people off of this state health plan. So we're ending up with a health plan of people my age and above. And thirdly, I will never accept any type of outside compensation or boardships. And my loyalty will always be to the people of North Carolina and not to Wall Street or anyone else. And Wall Street should not be picking the next treasurer in North Carolina. The voters in North Carolina should.
Well, absolutely. Some of these things, I guess people just don't know about. I mean, $600 million in fees, that's just crazy, Dale.
Right.
Wow.
So we're going to get to the bottom of it, and I appreciate the value and the you bring to your listeners and educating them. And people can talk about who the president's going to be or who the senator's going to be, but, you know, if you really want to thank those first responders and those public servants who are protecting you from crime, who are helping North Carolina get through this horrendous flood and all the other things that first responders do, if you really want to thank them, vote for Dale Falwell, CPA, for state treasurer, because the state treasurer is going to make the biggest difference in their life than anybody else on the ballot this year. And the last thing that a first responder, police officer, firefighter, the last thing they should ever have to think about when they leave the house is the safety and the security of their pension plan and their health plan. And that's why your listeners can go to DaleFalwell.com and tell their neighbors to vote for me.
Well, Dale, we know that you're busy, and so we'll let you go. But thank you for taking time out to join us on What Matters in North Carolina. Thank you for all that you have done for our state, and we look forward to seeing your expertise in action in the very near future, once again on behalf of the people of North Carolina. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dale Falwell. And, of course, disclaimer here, we don't endorse anyone. Not responsible for what he might say, but here at What Matters in North Carolina, we're not endorsing any candidate. In fact, we would love to have Dan Blue III on the program as well. We'll see if we can't make that happen. But Dale Falwell has quite a history of service in North Carolina, and we appreciate him taking time out to explain to us this unfunded, underfunded pension situation. And really, my thought is, no matter who the treasurer is, they're going to have to deal with this problem. And really, from a practical standpoint, getting the funding is really, that's going to be the hard part. You think these folks over at the General Assembly are going to smile and open up a checkbook when the state treasurer comes around and says, we're like $50 million short if we want to keep our funding levels at the way they need to be? I mean, how sexy is that? That's not like, you know, well, we just opened 18 miles of roads in my district. Just put a new bridge over here. Yeah. Well, it's going to be tough. I'll tell you, whoever the treasurer is, they're going to have to not only figure out the appropriate way to assume interest rates, because apparently that's what they've been doing over there incorrectly. It's pretty simple, actually. They're saying, well, we assume this rate of return. And of course, they're not getting that rate of return. Therefore, the funding levels are inadequate to keep the pension and the health plan in the place that it needs to be, forecasting out over the future. Now, that doesn't mean, and hopefully nobody gets the idea that, you know, the thing's going to go belly up tomorrow. That's not the case at all. But over time, as more and more people retire and more people are being paid and utilizing the health plan, well, you know, it's going to cost more money. And again, it's not just a matter of saying, well, we've been assuming, what, 7.5, which was kind of ridiculous. Well, let's assume a 4% rate of return. I mean, you can figure that out pretty good. But when you have to walk across Jones Street and stick your hand out and say, we need money for the pension or for the health plan, those are the kind of conversations that, well, they're going to be tough. And convincing the General Assembly to do that will certainly be a challenge in the years ahead, whoever is sitting in the office of the state treasurer. Well, we've had a great show today. We appreciate Francis DeLuca always as a guest on the program, president of the Civitas Institute, talking about polling and the campaign and interesting stuff. You know, the way people vote is always kind of a fascinating topic. And Mayor B.J. Murphy of Kinston, boy, he's just a great guy, and would love for him to be able to know that the listeners to this program are helping. And you heard his plea. Check out the Red Cross down there in Kinston in eastern North Carolina, perhaps the Salvation Army, and break them off a check. Do something tangible and help those people down there, because being underwater, I can imagine, is not a lot of fun. And they just need money. He wasn't sugarcoating it. I said, Mayor, what can we do to help? Well, we need money. And I'm sure they do. I mean, people are going to have to rebuild. They're going to have to replace. They need food. They need all kind of stuff. So do that. And we would certainly appreciate it. We have a big show planned for you tomorrow, as always. We'll be starting a new theme that I'm excited about. I've read a lot in different places about how conservatives and people of faith and others are facing a real dilemma now looking at the presidential campaign. For example, people of faith. Well, I don't want to vote for Hillary because of her policies on abortion and that sort of thing, but gee whiz, I don't want to vote for Donald Trump because of the things he says and just immorality. So we're going to take a look at that, and conservatives kind of feeling let down by those that they have sent to Washington who have not guarded the public purse like they should have, or at least like conservatives think they should have. So we're going to dig down and talk to some folks and find out, okay, so you're a conservative. What do you do now? People of faith, how do you deal with the dilemma of, you know, again, which candidate? So hopefully we'll have some interesting shows for you. I'm excited about it and looking forward to that in the days to come here on What Matters in North Carolina. Be sure to remind your friends and family they can find us in the iTunes store, the Google Play store. Go ahead and subscribe and get the podcast delivered daily to your PC or your laptop or your phone. And be sure to tell people to go to freedomactionnetwork.com. We'd love for you to expand our listening audience and help more people learn the important things to being a conservative in this day and age. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you tomorrow. Bye.